If you think academics just pontificate from their ivory towers, consider a U.S. military program called the Human Terrain System. In both Iraq and Afghanistan, the Department of Defense has hired civilian anthropologists and other social scientists as on-the-ground advisors to soldiers. The $40 million Human Terrain System now has more than 400 civilian scholars deployed in all 26 U.S. combat brigades in Iraq and Afghanistan. As you can imagine, this has proved quite controversial in the academic world. No one knows this better than James Derderian. He is a professor at Brown University and producer of the documentary Human Terrain, War Becomes Academic. And Strange Shams asked Derderian about the controversy.
The American Anthropological Association has been pretty critical of the Human Terrain System. I guess one of the things I'm wondering is, do they see it as a kind of social science version of the Manhattan Project, in which academics are being pulled into the military?
Yes, it's part of a piece of a larger effort. Manhattan Project, which was the project, of course, to build the nuclear bomb before Germany during World War II. This language has actually been used by the military, in particular a retired Major General Robert Scales, who in a speech talked about the First World War being the chemist war, you know, because of gas. It's how you end a war. What's the sort of technological edge that helps bring victory? Second World War is the physicist war, you know, development in the Manhattan Project of the nuclear bomb. World War III, the war of deterrence, that was the political scientist war, you know, the ones who gave game theory and systems theory a bad name, I think. And then finally, World War IV has been described by Scales and others as the anthropologist war. This is the war where you need to know the habits, the identity of the other. Who is it, you know, if you go in hot or if you go in warm, you go in cold into another country, what do you need to know to either get along or to defeat an enemy?
And so the ethical issue for anthropologists is whether or not to become complicit in a military endeavor?
I don't think complicit in a military endeavor, even the fiercest critics, for instance, Hugh Gustafson in the film says anthropologists being hired on a daily basis to work with corporations, they've worked in the past with the military. It's the question of how is the knowledge being used, for what purpose? And there, that's where the ethical judgments are being made and where there's a difference of opinion on whether or not this knowledge is being used for merely information gathering for humanitarian purposes, or is it for prolonging an occupation, or worse, is it being taken up the chain of command for targeting purposes?
9/11 was an attack by al-Qaeda against all Americans. Some people sort of say, well, the academics in America should not be involved in a war. Well, why not? We all died on 9/11. I think it's very appropriate that if academics believe that they understand a culture, that they help out, because we're all under attack by al-Qaeda. And for some Americans to say, oh, I'm an academic and therefore I'm not involved in this, is a lot of baloney.
I'm sure that there are plenty of senior military leaders who perfectly well understand that the Americans are involved in an imperial venture and they need military bases in that region. But there is a certain kind of rhetoric about how Americans have a mission to spread democracy, Americans only have the well-being of other people in mind. How could anyone possibly oppose what the Americans are doing? Once you go down that second track, you start to assume that the Americans are beneficent, then instead of reading resistance as inevitable resistance to foreign occupation, you start to think of it as some kind of cultural miscommunication. And you start to ask naive, misshapen questions. You know, if we only understood their culture better, how could we make them like us? Why do they hate us so much? They hate us because we're occupying their country, not because we don't understand their hand signals, and because occasionally we mistreat their women. So if you ask the wrong question, you get the wrong answer, and more people on both sides will die.
At the heart of your film is the story of your friend and colleague, Michael Batya, who, an anthropologist, who wound up participating in the Human Terrain System and was killed in Afghanistan. Can you tell me something about him?
He was someone who knew Afghanistan. He'd been there several times working with NGOs. He had been in many conflict zones, East Timor, West Africa, working either sort of, you know, for election observations or helping various humanitarian groups. So he was pretty, you know, he knew the turf, in other words. And in the process of doing research for us, he was recruited by the Human Terrain Program.
Hello, all. My greetings from Fort Benning, Georgia. After 2 intense months at Fort Leavenworth and a brief foray down to the JRTC at Fort Polk, I head out this evening for Kuwait and then Afghanistan. I'll be joining the human terrain team in Khost, Afghanistan, as a social scientist. I will be spending a good amount of time over the next several days in what the military calls hurry up and wait. I expect I'll be in Afghanistan for at least 9 months. While the program has proven to be controversial and widely reported, I am optimistic that given the right participants, the program has a real chance of reducing both the Afghan and American lives lost. Contrary to some of the criticism, I am not involved in covert research or activities, or in lethal targeting or interrogation. To no doubt, I will confront many challenges there, as I'm already preparing for both the real and ethical minefields. I look forward to hearing from everyone over the next year, and welcome any message of criticism, inquiry, or support.
How did he die?
On May 7th, 2008, he was going out to help mediate an intertribal dispute up in the mountains surrounding Khost. He was leaving from a forward operating base, Salerno. They stopped the convoy en route, and the lead commander of this company asked if Michael would come and ride with him in the lead Humvee. So he switches Humvees, and that Humvee was destroyed pretty much by a command-control IED, a roadside bomb. And two soldiers were killed, two lost their legs, and Michael was killed.
How did you all hear about it?
The next day his mother called. Let us know.
I guess I can't imagine how his colleagues would have reacted, given that you probably all had very mixed feelings about an anthropologist joining the military anyway.
Believe me, you know, we went through the stages of grief very quickly. And yeah, I mean, probably the toughest thing I've had to do as a professor, as a colleague, is go to a friend's funeral and under these circumstances, you know, deal with the sort of mixed emotions, but obviously also the mixed kind of ethical, intellectual response to this really tore a lot of people up.
He was always doing something greater than himself. Why this as opposed to the other things? That's the difficult question we're having to answer. And I think this also relates to how other people see this death, the politicization of his death, because a lot of people will say another fallen comrade on the front lines in the war on terror. But he was not a nationalist, he was an internationalist, ideologically, philosophically, culturally. And it would be a misunderstanding, a misinterpretation of what he stood for, what he was about, if he is viewed through the lens of nationalism.
You said the argument has been made that this is, in some ways, the anthropologist's war. I guess I'm curious, what do you personally think about that? How does it make you, how do you respond as an anthropologist to the idea that your profession's insights and methodology are being used, are important in this war?
You know, you look at Kissinger's history as an international relations expert, or, there's a sort of a history of the revolving door between academia and policy making. And I'm not, and I'm not ideologically opposed to this. I am, however, if I can use this word, epistemologically opposed, because I think to pretend that you can maintain your objectivity while trying to use your knowledge for another purpose besides critical inquiry really just sort of undermines the whole basis of scholarship. So I'm against this, it's fine if people want to wear both hats, but if you try to do it simultaneously, don't try to pretend that you're, one and not the other. I mean, you're not a scholar when you're advising somebody who has the power to shape, policies that have direct impact on funding and with the military, obviously on matters, as I said before, of, life and death.
So we go out to the villages and to the cities and talk to the Iraqis, get an idea of their perceptions, their feelings, basically what they're thinking about their culture. And then we take that back to the military so they have a better understanding of the local population.
A scene from James Dredarian's documentary film Human Terrain, War Becomes Academic. Anne Strangeham spoke with Dredarian.